Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa. So glad you're here. Always so appreciative of the people that tune in and listen to the show. I don't know who you are. I sure would love to. If you ever want to shoot me an email at change@jessazimmerman.com, let me know what you think of the podcast. What would you like to hear about? Topics you're curious about? What haven't I covered in my 175 episodes so far? You know, and let me know if you ever want to be on the show, because today is one of those days where I'm interviewing somebody about their own personal story. Now, she did happen to write a book about it called White Knight, but it's about her own journey with a partner that she loved dearly, really a fairy tale marriage, and he got early onset Alzheimer's. And so we are talking about the progression. This was a second marriage, so they didn't have that many years together. And it went from this incredible love story to ultimately his death, and the shifts in their relationship, the shifts in their sex life, in the way that worked between them, issues of consent, different things, you know, we're talking about that would be applicable to any of you who, heaven forbid, would be living with this right now. I mean, it's just a heartbreaking story, but it's also uplifting. She's got some really beautiful takeaways and really lovely memories of their life together. Anyway, it's a really powerful story. And if you've got one, if you have a personal story around your relationship and your sex life, hopefully with a happier ending than this one, but even if not, I'd love to interview you. So shoot me an email, get in touch if you want to be on the podcast. And in the meantime, I hope you, I want to say enjoy, but maybe that's not quite the right word. I hope you really appreciate and are touched and moved by Wanda Braveman, who is sharing her story about what happened in her marriage. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So, Wanda, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
I guess we should sort of start at the beginning of your story, you know, a little bit of background about your relationship with Joe, and paint the picture for us, if you would.
All right. I was married to my first husband at 18, had three kids, was married 25 years, which ended in a divorce. I have twin girls. One of my twin girls' father-in-law had a twin brother. And
lots of twins in the story. Okay.
A fraternal twin brother. I met him on their 50th birthday. They flew him in from Minnesota. He was living in Minnesota. He too was divorced. And so he came into Watsonville to their joint birthday party. It was a surprise for Jim, my daughter's father-in-law. It was a surprise. So he didn't know his twin brother was coming. They hadn't seen each other in years. So it was a big deal.
Wow.
We had probably 70 or 80 people there. I mean, it was a big deal. And I met him, and it was just like getting hit with a brick.
Mm, in a good way.
In a good way. Yeah, mostly. Yeah. In a good way. We ended up going out on a date. And then he went back to Minnesota. He had work to do, and I didn't see him for a year.
A year later,
he came back at Christmas time, and Jim and Cheryl was Jim's wife. So they immediately brought him over to see us. And I had our joint grandbaby at the time, who was like 18 months old. And he came in, they brought pizza, we watched a movie. I couldn't breathe through the whole movie, and that started it. And 9 months later, we were married.
Wow. Had the two of you both spent that year aware of connection, or did that really start a year later, you know, when he came back for Christmas?
you know, we knew before he left that day for that birthday party, that night he gave me a hug and he squeezed my hand and he rubbed the inside of my wrist with his thumb. And he said, "I'm going to see you again soon, real soon." And he just hugged me. He was a full body hugger. Yeah. And I was just like, I was like 44 years old and I melted into him. And I felt like I was 16 with my first date.
Wow.
We did not contact each other. We did not speak for the whole year, well, March to December. And we thought about each other all the time, but we never spoke. We didn't have any contact with each other at all. And then as a complete surprise to me, he came back in December.
Yeah.
2 weeks after that, he moved in with me, which was so uncharacteristic. My kids were absolutely appalled, which I thought was great. I loved it. You know, they did a lot to me over the years, so it was fun to get back at them.
Well, and they were grown, right? It's not like you're introducing somebody new with toddlers.
Grown and married. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So also, if you would paint a little bit of a picture of the years before he was sick in terms of the, you know, if we want to contrast what happened in your relationship as Alzheimer's kicked in, and let's paint that against the contrast of what it was like in the beginning.
Well, Joe in high school and college was a diver, dove off of high dives into the water. And he at one point was like a couple points away from making it to the Olympics. He went to Bemidji College in Minnesota, and he started his career. He worked for NCR Corporation most of his life as a salesman. And then towards the end, he stopped working for them and started doing woodworking and working in construction in Minnesota. And then when he came out here, after we connected, he immediately went and took his Class B contractor's license without studying and passed it on the first try. And anybody that knows anything about that knows that that was extremely difficult, really intelligent man. And so nothing physically wrong with him that I could see in the beginning. We did normal living. We were married. We had, you know, my kids. He has two children. And so it was normal living. And then about 4.5 years in, he was working for a company and they called me one day and said, he can't punch in. He can't, because they were using their social security numbers to punch in. They said he can't remember his social security number and he can't remember the names of his coworkers. And at the same time that was happening at home, which I didn't know was happening at work at the time, but at home, he was starting to have trouble reading his watch. I would say things like, "Well, hey, Joey, what time is it?" And he'd go, "Hmm." And he would look at his watch and he couldn't really tell. So I thought it was the watch. So I bought him over a course of like 3 months, like 4 or 5 different types of watches. Digital, analog, old fashioned, big letters. And then I went and took him and got new glasses thinking, well, maybe it's his glasses. And then at that point, that's when his office called. And I immediately went down there that day and immediately drove him right to the doctor. They said, he needs to leave. Something's wrong with him. You better take him to the doctor. We literally left that office, went right to the doctor. And within an hour, we were standing out in front of the doctor's office crying. It was really fast for us.
Part of my interest in this and, you know, being in the Better Sex podcast is thinking about what happens in a sexual relationship as someone's mental capacity is shifting like that. Like, you know, questions of how long did it feel connecting? When did consent start to be an issue? When did caregiving sort of interrupt what might have been? You know, I'm imagining, because this hasn't happened to me, I'm imagining that as you have to do more caregiving, it affects, I don't know, sexual desire or interest, or, you know, it changes the balance in the relationship, right? So I guess.
Definitely. Well, okay. So let me start at the beginning.
Okay. I know that was a lot all at once.
Just to kind of. Okay. So we had a very sexual relationship, obviously, in the beginning of a relationship, especially when your kids are grown and there's no stress of waking up in the middle of the night with babies. Your sexual and romantic life, it flourishes, at least it did for us. He was very sexual. We literally had sex morning and night for 4.5 years.
Wow.
Almost. I mean, unless somebody was sick. It was,
It was
both of us. It wasn't just him, or, you know, I wasn't just giving in to him. I mean, we were living a romance novel and I knew it. You know how you've read the best romance novel of your life? Well, this was it. And I was in it and I knew it.
Yeah.
And so because I knew it would be like dreaming awake. So I knew I was living this dream. I just sucked the marrow out of it. I mean, we just, everything was passionate. Whether we were eating breakfast, everything we did had a passionate flair to it.
Wow.
It wasn't always about sex. It was about maybe having your legs brush up against each other on the couch or just holding hands in a parking lot, walking to the store. Those things are sensual and sexual to me anyway. So that was the picture before. After that day on the street, when we were both so shocked, the doctor said it's either Lewy body disease or it's Alzheimer's.
Wow.
Those were our two choices, and both of them were horrible.
Right.
So of course we did the crying. We went right over to Jim and Cheryl's, Joe's brother and sister-in-law. And that was his only closest physical relative, his brother. So of course we went right over there, and we were there a lot.
Yeah.
So as far as the sex, we continued having sex, but all of us, it was just this black cloud that descended on this house that had been so carefree.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it's not anymore. And it was almost instantaneous that it changed everything for us. And we still kept making love, but I don't know for him. I really don't. I can only tell you, for me, it was, you know, I knew that this was the best day ever because tomorrow would be worse. I knew that it wasn't going to ever get better. It was only going to get worse. And so for me, it was like saying goodbye every time we made love. It was like saying goodbye every time we woke up in the morning, because I knew he would not be as good tomorrow as he was today.
Wow.
So it was immediate, but we continued making love. After, I can't even really remember for sure. It's in the book. after maybe six, seven months, the doctor originally told us that because he had early onset, he was only 57 when he was diagnosed, it was going to go really fast, that they only were going to give him 2 years.
Wow.
I was just like, oh my God, that can't be. I mean, so we gave him drugs to not cure him, but to make it last longer. And the doctor flat out told me, are you sure you want to do this? Because this is only going to prolong it. And I went, if this was reversed and he was talking to you, I guarantee you he would do this. Yeah. So I have to do this. So after about, say, 7 or so months, sex all of a sudden one morning was just a quick slam, bam, thank you, ma'am. And it so shocked me because he was so not like that. He was tender, romantic, and very careful, forceful sometimes, and fun, but always really respectful and very not like this. This was not forcible, but when I was done, I remember thinking, I wonder if others that are raped feel like this, because this is what rape would feel like to me. It wasn't rape. I never really thought of it as rape, but it felt like if we let this go on, if I let this continue, it will end up being rape.
And that was like one day to the next sort of turned that corner. Yes. Oh my gosh, how heartbreaking.
So for me, I was like, it shook me to my core. And I was like, okay, this can't happen anymore.
Yeah.
So I had no one to talk to about this. I couldn't talk to my mom or my sisters about stuff like this because, so I'm sure they wouldn't have wanted to have to discuss this with me, and they wouldn't have known. And I knew that. And there weren't, you know, while there were books, one of the reasons this book got written was because there weren't books out there that explained how you felt about Alzheimer's. There was clinical books, and I bought every one of those, but there wasn't. And so I knew clinically what was going to happen to us, but I did not know how it was going to feel.
Yeah.
You know, my mom told me all about sex. I'm a farmer's daughter. We raised cattle. I watched, you know, animals procreate from the time I could walk. But even my mom never explained how it was going to feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can know all the mechanics of it, but still get completely shell-shocked by the feelings that you're not prepared for.
Right.
So that's part of the reason this book is more about feelings than about it's going to be this way and this way and this way. And also because for each person, it's unique. This is unique to us because we're unique. So this may not happen to everybody. Anyway, so I decided, okay, we can't ever let this happen again. There can't be any more sex, because I did switch from, I was a lover, and now I'm his, like his mother almost. I'm telling him what to wear and where to go and how to sit. So I started wearing flannels to bed and making sure, because we were very snuggle, we're big snugglers. So I made sure that I didn't go to bed till he fell asleep first.
So let me ask you something. Before this happened, leading up to that one time that all of a sudden felt so bad, were you still getting something from the lovemaking you were having? And I don't mean pleasure. I mean like some sense of connection or some sense of, okay.
Absolutely connected. It's just that there was this doom in the back of my head.
You know?
You know, it was hard sometimes to concentrate on the pleasure when I knew that it was short-lived. So anyway, so I stopped it. I just would not let that be a part of our life. And he quickly adjusted to it, you know.
Oh, okay.
He was sliding down. My book has stairs on the cover, and the cover is the stairs of life. And as a person with Alzheimer's or any kind of dementia, what they do is they'll start out at the top of the stairs and they're good. And then they start taking steps down the stairs.
Yeah.
And Alzheimer's patients unravel like a baby grows. So it's not, if you've ever been pregnant, you look at your belly, it doesn't grow constantly every day. You may go a week and you say, well, I haven't got a belly. You wake up one morning and boom, you have a belly. And so that's how your pregnancy grows. That's how babies grow. They don't just, you know, you might wake up one morning and go, oh my God, she looks like she's 2 inches taller. And she And so that's how Alzheimer's patients unravel. They unravel like a baby grows. So it's not all at once. And we do, you get complacent and go, okay, we're all right. We're okay. And then bang, the next morning you wake up and they can't find their shoes.
Yeah.
And they don't even know they go on their feet. And you're like, wow. And then it would stay that way. And then it would drop. And sometimes you only drop one step. And it's a very minor thing that you may not really pay that much attention to. Other times it's 2 or 3 steps at a time.
Yeah.
And by the time they're down at the bottom, they're gone. So that's how I liken the way Alzheimer's patients unravel.
Okay.
That's the way to
you didn't go from lovemaking to nothing, right? Wasn't there some middle ground in there that you were?
We went from lovemaking to nothing. That last encounter was just too jarring for me. So we went from that to nothing.
And he adjusted fine to that. It wasn't something he didn't even know to ask about it, I suppose, right? It just
did not know to
changed
ask
in life.
It.
Yeah.
I would give him a hug when I'd come to bed if he was awake, and then I'd roll over to my side with my clothes on or something. I was wearing clothes and he didn't question it. He'd fall right to sleep.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about Alzheimer's patients. They don't like water. You can't get them in a bathtub. You cannot sit them in a bathtub. They'll almost never get in a bathtub. And they don't like showers. And at the same time that I was trying to figure out how to get him a shower, because we showered a lot together, right? We were very intimate. So sex was in the shower. Sex was everywhere. And then all of a sudden, I can't figure out how to get him in the shower. And I got to get up and go to work. I quit my job. And I used to be a commercial operations manager for a commercial janitorial company. So I had to start working on my own, cleaning houses, taking him with me. So we had to get up every morning, shower, get ready, and go to work. And he had to come with me. And I had a hard time figuring that out. So, and then at the same time, I'm thinking, okay, this is such a sexual person. How am I supposed to not worry that he's going to attack one of my girls who were drop dead gorgeous, or my mother, or any female that he runs into? I was so scared. What if I take him into the grocery store and he runs up to a woman and tries to grab her because he's so horny?
Right, right. And he's lost sort of the capacity to, I mean, you know, who knows what he'll do? Right, right.
Filters are gone. So you don't really ever know what they're going to do. So I would invite him into the shower to take a shower with me. And I made it sexual to relieve his stress and to keep the continuity of our lovemaking in a fashion that I had control over.
Okay. Did that have for you any connecting left in terms of a sexual, sensual connection, or was that purely utilitarian? It gets them in the shower. It keeps them released.
Well, of course, it was utilitarian.
Right. Right.
It stopped being sexual for me and became more of a loving gesture.
Okay. So it still felt loving.
It was
to be
very
something
loving.
Okay, loving something.
I would not have done that for a patient. Right. I used to be an operations manager for a, I also was an operations manager for a caregiving facility when I was young. I would never have done that for an 85-year-old patient, but, but with my husband, of course, that's different. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess you're not thinking, you know, just picturing this, I'm not thinking there are real consent issues.
Okay. So that is an issue. At the time that that was happening, it never even occurred to me. That just never even occurred to me because we had been lovers. We were still lovers and we had to adapt to that. We were husband and wife.
Right.
And there was no force involved.
Right. And he was obviously enjoying it.
Obviously. However, now that I'm older and wiser, and of course, who do I marry after Joe? A sex therapist.
Right.
And the things I learned from Stephen, I did not know as a younger woman. And so now the idea of consent, I was just talking about him with him this morning. Oh my God, did I rape him? And he said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because it was done in a consensual, loving way.
Yeah.
But that would have never occurred to me then.
Right.
And if it had, I don't even know what I would have done because everybody has to do what they think is right. This right. necessarily wouldn't be right for everyone, but in the context of our life and our relationship, it was so normal to do.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to just take a short little break here, and I want to let you know about Intimacy with Ease, the method that helps otherwise happy couples create a sex life that is fun, easy, light for both people. So if you are an otherwise happy couple, if sex is the elephant in the room or sex is the little bit of the challenge for you guys, you may want to check this out. You can go to intimacywithease.com and you'll see information there. You'll see short videos. You'll have access to a full webinar about it. All kinds of information to let you know if this would be the right thing for you. Yeah, and that's what strikes me about this. There's no rules. Who knows? This is all gray. Another thing that seems different, though, is you were pleasuring him. You weren't like taking your own pleasure with his body. Like that also seems like that would be a distinction.
That's right.
To make around consent. Yeah.
And the other thing is it wasn't, you know, it was loving, right? We would both soap each other up. He knew how to do that. And
yeah.
There are some things that he didn't forget. So he would soap me up. I would soap him up. And after he would stand in the shower and hold me.
Yeah.
And tell me he loved me.
Wow.
So I think it was probably that part that gave me consent.
Yeah. It's obviously still an emotional memory.
Probably always will be.
Yeah. So how long, again, this went so quickly, how many months, weeks were these sort of shower encounters going, like that phase?
Okay. So because our relationship was so unique and I promised him in the very beginning that I would keep him with me forever. However, in high school, he was also a boxer. And one night towards the end, he was also a sundowner. So he would walk around naked in the middle because he slept naked. He'd walk around the house naked.
Right.
In the middle of the night, he'd be wide awake and I'd be trying to sleep. So I had to put flip locks on the doors because I knew that he wouldn't be able to figure out how to open a flip lock because I was scared he was going to get up and walk out of the house.
Right, right.
He got up, went to the bathroom. I got up with him, tried to get him back in bed and he wouldn't go. I said, come on, Joey. Our granddaughters called him Joey or JoJo. So I ended up doing that too. So I said, come on, Joey, let's get back in bed. And he said, nope. I was like 2 a.m, like, please, I'm so tired. Let's get back in bed. He goes, nope. And I asked him again and he pushed me onto the bed, got on top of me, held me down with one hand around my neck and cocked his fist like this, like he was going to hit me.
Wow.
And for the first time in my life, I was scared. I was like, oh my God. And it's in the middle of the night. I couldn't call anybody because I can't get to him. He's not real tall. He was like 5'7", but really built. And I could not move him. So I just had to keep talking him down. I'm your wife. You love me. I'm Wanda. This is Wanda. You can't hit me. Come on, Joey. And I talked to him for about 5 minutes of him standing there like this. He was holding back because his hand was shaking. And so finally he rolled off of me and I was just like, oh my God.
Oh.
So the next morning I told my sister-in-law and she said, that's it. You've had enough.
Yeah. Wow.
So at the end, I had to put him in a home. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you how it ends because you have to read the book because it's so unusual and it's so beautiful that I'm not going to tell you. If anybody wants to find out how this story ends, they have to read the book. Obviously he passes away, but
right.
How it happened was completely unique to us and so apropos for the ending of this love story.
Yeah.
But the sexual part was an issue. And the other part that you didn't ask me, but I'm sure people would want to know, is what did I do about my sexuality?
Yeah.
And for me, I had always had, even with my first husband, we had a great sex life. It was, you know, that was never an issue. So for me, I was unprepared for how to handle myself because I'd never had to.
Oh.
I always had so much sex. There was never an issue of, you know, oh my God, I'm horny and there's nobody around. You know? It never was an issue for me. So this was a whole new territory that I was unfamiliar with. So I had to figure that out. And I knew that I had to take care of myself because that was a healthy thing to do. I mean, I knew enough about sex and sensuality and sexuality and what it does for your immune system that it's critically important that you don't ignore that. So I didn't ignore it.
Right. But I'm imagining all these stages you're describing from the day you learned of the diagnosis through lovemaking, through masturbation, through the showers, all of it. It just seems like you would have been right up against the grief of this whole thing. Oh, yeah. And even, you know, sex with yourself, sex with him in the meantime, just seems like you'd be right there, right next to the loss that you was already happening and was coming. And it would be so infused. It seems to me it would be so infused with grief.
It is. Here's how I dealt with that. Maybe around a few months in, I started noticing he was just the happiest guy ever. This guy was so happy. You give him a hot dog and you think I gave him an $80 steak. Be like, oh my God, this, because he loved to eat. He ate everything. He was the most fun person to cook for you've ever been with. No matter what I cooked, it was like so amazing. So sometimes, you know, if I gave him a hot dog, I noticed he'd be like, oh my God, this is the best ever. And I'd be like, I was ready to jump off a bridge. Oh. I probably would have jumped off a bridge, except I knew it wasn't a very tall one. I'd probably just get hurt. It was like, you know, or throw myself in front of a train. It's like, there were days where I was so despondent because I just couldn't believe this was happening.
Yeah.
And I noticed that he was just so happy. And so I did not coin this. I did not make this up. This was not, did not originally come from me, but I started staying in his moments.
Mm.
The minute I taught myself how to do that, because I didn't know anybody that did that. I never, you know, I just did it on my own. The minute I switched my head and made everything about the moment we were in, everything changed.
Wow.
And I have to honestly tell you that this was probably one of the most sweetest periods in my life. And I don't regret one second of it, but there was grief, of course. One thing about living with somebody that's losing their mind, you start grieving them way before they pass.
Yeah. So yeah.
Your grief actually lasts twice as long. And at first I thought, well, if I grieve him now, then at least I'll get that over with when he dies or I'll be done with it. Right. And it's like, no. So the grief just lasts twice as long.
Well, and you got to grieve like every step down that staircase, like you said, right? Every change, every loss, every, you know.
And because I was with him 24/7, he literally was at the point in his life where he would fall on me, he had to touch me. Because an Alzheimer's patient doesn't know what happens next, right? So they don't know what's going to happen in 2 minutes from now. And they can only remember like a minute or so before. So imagine it would be like, and the only way to describe this is put blindfolds on and walk around your room. That's what it feels like for an Alzheimer's patient because they don't know what happens next.
How frightening. That's just a frightening. I've never pictured that.
The thing. They don't even know they don't know.
Oh.
He would just follow me around and hold me so he would go where I went.
Yeah.
So literally he was with me every second.
Is this something that you have continued to somehow be involved in or active in? I mean, you wrote the book, obviously, but are there other ways that you're still somehow engaged with the community
or
something?
When I met Stephen, my book had just come out that day. So we incorporated, Stephen immediately wanted to help me get my book out there. So he started putting it in his practice. We now have a section of our Stephen's therapy practice called Care for Caregivers, where we will design a session, a short, like half a day session for you and your family, however many there are, from one to, if you had, you could fit 80 in there, you know, we would have a session based on your situation, on your family, on your, or the person you're caregiving, or, and, or we have group, we have a group called Care for Caregivers where we meet either once a week or once every 2 weeks. Each section of group is different, and we advertise it. So it's become part of our therapy.
Right.
I'm not a therapist. It's
right. Just, right. Right. But it's this wonderful gift of, I mean, in a, I sort of feel bad saying that, but it is too, that you've got a gift to share in terms of supporting.
I wanted
people.
To make sure that he didn't die in vain.
Yeah. So last question, What would be sort of your parting words? Like if somebody is in this situation and their loved one, their dear partner has Alzheimer's or Lewy body or some other sort of dementia, what's the most important thing you would say to them? Or, you know, or a couple of them if you want.
So first thing I would say, this book addresses caregiving for everyone, whether you're a mother caregiving your children, or whether you're a partner or a married spouse or an employee. We've done workshops for companies because our whole point is to stay in the moment with that person. It's so easy to be a mom and just be like, okay, let me dress you. Let me get you fed. I got to get to work. Oh my God, what do you need now? Oh, you need new shoes. Oh, you're sick. And you forget to stay in the moments with them because you're so busy living life.
Yeah.
And I think we all need to learn to stop and stay in each other's moments, because this moment we're having right now on this podcast is never going to happen again.
Right. Exactly. And it's the only one there is right now.
It's the only one there is. And so we need to suck the marrow out of that moment. And as you do that, the blowback of that is in huge enrichment. It's hard to be scared. I never had a problem with Joe as long as I wasn't comparing him to who he used to be. If I sat there with him and went, oh my God, he was my white knight. That's why this book is called White Knight. And then I turned out to be his.
Yeah.
So it's very important to stay in the moment with the people you love, your family, your friends. It doesn't matter what disease they have, whether it's cancer or, after Joe passed, my mom had Alzheimer's too. I had to help take care of her. And now Stephen's mom also has
oh my gosh,
dementia. And she lives with us. She's 96. She's earned it. But still, you know, it's bringing back a lot of memories for me. And in the beginning, that was hard. So, and this book is written based on a heterosexual couple, cisgendered. Mm-hmm. But this book could be any LGBTQ+ people. It could be two men or anybody that's in love or in a partnered relationship in any way. This is apropos for them.
Yeah.
So this book becomes actually quite universal, even though it's so narrowly written.
Right. Right.
And so if somebody were to, I would say the first thing you do is that it doesn't have to be my book, but get, you know, read. There's so much more out there to read now than there was. Joe died in 2009. There's so much more to read, and he got sick in 2004. So there's so much more to read, and there's so much more information now than there was before. So I would certainly suggest reading, but I would absolutely get some therapy.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. I really didn't have the money, but it never even occurred to me. And now, of course, that I am with a therapist, and not to hawk him, but I would take better care of myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't do that. I spent all my time, every breath for him. And I did not take care of myself. You know, I didn't die from it. I'm fine now, I think. But I think it would have been a little easier for me if I'd had some emotional help.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story in the book and today on the show. I know it's going to be really meaningful.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get-to-know-you and question-and-answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that. Become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.